Okay, ready to start? Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the second lecture of the XML course. Today, we're going to dig into the basics of XML. So what is going to happen is that I'm going to play around a bit with the one of the XML editors that we have been suggesting for you to use. So we will use Eclipse, because we are Mac users both, and the Notepad++ would be much better. I think it's a bit more lightweight and serves better the purposes of this course, but it's not supported in Mac, so what we use is Eclipse, so you're free to use that one as well. And if you want to, you can download the examples from Optima that we will be using during this lecture. You don't have to if you don't want to, but if you have your laptop, you are, of course, welcome to play along with the XML documents as we go along, because that way you learn much, much faster. Because as you will notice during this course, the basics of XML are rather simple, what is in the XML notation that it gives. So following those basic principles and what we go through during this lecture helps you quite far in the course. So as you might remember, next week is the first exercise, and the assignments were given already in Optima. The first 2 weeks of exercise, like next week and the week after that, will be around the basic XML documents, and the kind of the lessons learned during this lecture should get you quite far with those. I mean, and if you have any problem in setting up the editor that you are using, or anything in relation to validating the documents, or just any trouble to get you started, just contact us, and especially contact Tony. Tony Taipalus will be moderating those exercise sessions, and you might still remember that every single week there's one mandatory task, and then some additional tasks that you should do if you want to get some bonus points for the exam. So those are voluntary to do, but they are very much recommended, because they are rather easy once you have done the mandatory assignment. So let's say if you pass with a grade 2 from the exam with the additional points from these tasks, you might get 15 additional pointers, so it might raise your grade even to up to 4. So, and of course, depending how many points you have. So, and you can do those individually or as a group assignments. And I'm sure all of you have already looked into these guidelines. Has anyone already started with the assignments? Maybe you can raise your hand if you have. Has anyone looked at them and thought that they are rather simple? Anyone who thinks so? That's very good. For you, this course will most likely be rather easy to pass, but still try to take the best out of it, since we do have a couple of visiting lectures and some examples that more or less present the more advanced ways of using XML. So as already stated, and what you will see, that you can apply XML in a very, very simple manner to solve some particular tasks, to give some structure for a class of documents, and maybe presenting that online in a web browser. That's a kind of a simple task. But of course, if you're a web developer, you are dealing with web services, it might be that you have to then make sure that the different systems you are using can communicate easily by the use of XML, or that you do some other type of web development where some other XML-based languages might be utilized. And the kind of a lessons learned from this course is that whatever the XML-based language you are using, it still falls to the basics. So the basics that we go through today are some kind of a rules that every single XML-based language will follow. And today's assignments, as I said, I already uploaded those to Optima. And if you want to play around with those in your Notepad or Eclipse or any other editor that you're using, do not try to open them by clicking them from Optima. What you should do is just press the right button and save, so that it saves the actual XML file to your computer. Because if you just click it from Optima, it tries to visualize it in the browser and tries to interpret the XML document, and that's not very usable because those are just text. So what you can do is press the right button. I can actually show it even to you. So once going to Optima, Philip, do you by any chance have a mouse with you? If I can lend that, I forgot my mouse. It's pretty hard to do any editing without one. So there's the Optima space in, again, a bit of a recap for you. But the course materials are there, the recommended readings, support materials, the exercises. And below or behind lecture 2, there are the lecture slides, but also a couple of XML examples that we will be playing around with. And if you just press this, it's just text with some markup. So it tries to interpret it and just put it on a browser, but there's no external presentation given for humans to read. It's just like a put it in a row. But what you can do is actually press here the wheel sign and, okay, this is in Finnish. Lowest, and then from there, Tallinn. If you're using an English version, it's just like, I think, something like object tools and then save. And then it will save the file to your computer. Then you can put it to your editor, whatsoever you're using. So we are using Eclipse. So what you can do is just from the file system, just drag it to the folder you want it to be in. And there you go. And then it presents it in an XML format and not trying to interpret it in a web browser because there's no presentation given. It's just XML with some simple markup. And what that means, we will be going through quite much in this lecture. Is somebody of you planning to actually play around during the lecture, or are you just following? It might then depend a bit of a style we would go along. Is anyone, maybe you can raise your hand if you're planning to do something in an editor while. Okay, very good. So if you come up with any suggestions or any questions, anything, just feel free to put those on. Last time we put this message wall as automatic, but there was so much spam, so now it's on manual. So Philip will always check your comment before it goes through. So if you learn how to behave and not put too much, not to say crap, but not so essential information there, we might put it back to automatic, so then also the questions pop up faster there. So it's your choice. But anyways, a couple of words just why XML came to be, like before we go to some of the essentials, is that, well, I don't want to make it a kind of a history lesson, but you might know something about this ARPANET and NASA being involved when the internet architecture was put together in 60s, mainly for different universities to converse with each other. And from then on, there was something called HTML that was created in the 80s. And what that actually is, it's the kind of father or mother of XML. It was a markup language, a set of rules similar to XML, but it was extremely hard to manage. And what they actually brought in was this document type definition, DTD, what Philip will be talking to you on the next lectures. HTML already put this in place that XML language also uses. But it was extremely hard for any kind of a developer or document manager in a company to facilitate and build their own languages based on. And that is the reason why internet became more used, like when CERN and when they produced it sometime in the start of 90s, 91. Since then, there were some different types of business purposes, but also reasons to make this kind of a document management and creation of new languages, it must be much, much faster, and HTML was just too stiff. And that is when the XML started to form. And in the end of the 90s, the first XML documentation came together, and since then the development of web was much, much faster, because many of the web languages that are using, they are based on XML. And you might, some of you already said that you are quite familiar with HTML. So HTML was application, a language coming and derived from this HTML, the kind of a complex monster that was there in the first place. XML was a very much simplified, they narrowed down and took kind of everything that's somehow unrelated or too complex to manage. They made the recommendation, what XML is, so simple that it just builds on a couple of structures, gives few rules for any developer then to build their own languages. And XHTML was just a kind of a more valid version of HTML derived out of XML. And many of the languages Philip was talking about in the last lecture are derived from XML. And during this course, you will get quite many details on what those languages would be. But yeah, as I said, when the development of internet towards business purposes and for maybe for private reasons as well, there was a need for something faster, easier to apply, and that's when XML and related standards were coming from. And as also said, XML is part of very, very simple like development efforts. When you just want to give some structure for a couple of documents and present them online, XML can do that. But it also facilitates and supports many much more complex functions. And the reason, because it's so simple, the basics of XML, it's very easy to adapt to different types of circumstances. And it's very easy to standardize. I mean, different types of systems can very easily then discuss with each other and exchange information, because the essentials, the basics of XML, are so easy to somehow grasp and manage. And then you can extend it to whatsoever purposes you want to. And when you think about social media, any types of sites you are using nowadays, from Facebooks, Twitters, to Instagram and whatsoever, these are very, very highly based on XML and what XML has enabled. So a couple of those examples will also be showed during this course. Philip already told you something about that if we want to somehow separate the types of things that XML enables, first of all, giving somehow structure to documents that, let's say, something like something in the industry, it might be that a factory wants to somehow give some kind of all the guidelines, whatsoever, like official documents, technical documentation to their employees. XML can be used for that, so that giving a kind of a simple structure that the company or any subsidiaries or anything they might be using, it always falls to the same structure. So XML as a document language is very common, but XML is very good for describing metadata, so any type of information about data that Philip was talking about. Some of these we will now talk during this lecture as well. And the last one is the data interchange between software applications. The databases part will not be really discussed during this lecture, but we will say some words about it in the couple of last lectures. So what XML actually stands for is Extensible Markup Language, which means that XML specification itself is just a kind of a very simple notation that can be developed further on. And the XML specification itself doesn't define any of the element names or attribute names or the structures that one might use. Anyone can extend this notation, these guidelines, for their own purposes. And that's what the language stands for. And as Philip told, it's a meta language. It's a language to describe further languages. In this lecture, I will show a couple of examples, something like a poem and something of sort of an invoice. So all of these are examples that are extended from XML, a language to describe invoices, giving them a proper structure in a company context is one example how you might create your own XML language. But more of this later. And if anyone is kind of afraid of the opening this link, the notation about XML is here, and the structure that it includes is, it seems that there are quite many pointers here that what makes it like look that there's a lot of stuff in here. But basically what it includes is that it gives just a few very simple guidelines that during this lecture we will discuss. In the next lectures, Philip will discuss with you the logical structure, so how to give a kind of a grammar to the XML documents, and also how you can bind many kinds of data in bigger packages and send them to documents, DTDs, and so on. It's the physical structure that I will discuss later during this course. And there's some issues about how the processing of XML should take place, but the guideline and the notation is very, very simple, and that's actually what XML is. But we want to extend a bit during this course and give you some practical examples from different domain areas where XML is used. Okay, then we go to the very, very basics of XML is that there's some things that are called like well-formedness rules that apply for any XML document. Any XML document that is derived out of this notation has to always follow these two rules. When there's an XML document and there's something called element, like within the examples you see their date, each element must have a beginning and an end tag. If this isn't followed, the processing of the XML document breaks down. Then these well-formedness rules aren't followed. The second rule is that the elements must be properly nested. I'll show you in the editor just in a moment. But if you look at this example here, that there's something called the date element that closes actually in the end. Or does it? As you can see, there isn't this kind of a slash symbol included, not the guitarist of, or ex-guitarist of Guns N' Roses, but slash symbol anyways. That actually breaks down the XML document already, and it's not, this would be terminated, and it would be false. It would not be operated further. When you look at this further, there's something, element called day, and it closes after an element month starts. But as you can see, the month and day are actually, they should be vice versa, because the day is terminated before month is closed. And this is where I might show you how it could be better done. So when we give XML a bit more structure, when we visualize it like this, it's much easier to read as well. This is just a kind of an example of a poem where you have some information about the author, date, the title, what it is, and then the stanza, and then what the actual poem is about. As you can see, whenever there's if we look at the actual poem, the lines, they all always like are breaked before one starts. And the stanza, that is the kind of a parent element, it all also closes before the poem closes. And let's look at this in the editor, how we could break this very easily. Can you actually read this in the back as well? Okay, so let's just say that we have the poem here. I will talk in a few minutes what the heck this is about, that is in the start of the document. This is something standardized, you don't need to really care about this, but there are a few things in relation to it that I will explain. What you have here is the root element called poem, and then the contents of it following it. But let's say we would do something like this. There's an author element that is the first one following when the poem starts. If this closing tag is missing, and we would try to validate this. If you are using Eclipse, you can just right-click here and press validate. And then it's just that everything must be saved before the operation takes place. I'll just press OK. It said that validation completed, but one error was discovered. One resource was validated in under a second. Okay, we understand. And in Eclipse, you can find all the problems in relation to your document down here under problems. The error states the element type author must be terminated by the matching end tag author. So this is actually what happens with XML. If this basic well-formedness rule that there's a beginning and an end tag isn't followed, the processing of this is terminated. Let's say if you would like to process this and send this to a further application or to your web browser, it wouldn't be showed. There's actually something like bit of a nasty situation because the HTML language was there before XHTML and the more valid versions came, is that web browsers usually try to interpret also this code that is a bit broken down, but that's something for later. But if we would like to fix this issue, we would just end with the slash symbol. But then about the proper nesting, two rules. First of all, this beginning end tag and being properly nested. If, for example, we would change the order, as you can see, the poem is the first element that appears, and it's the last one to close. If we would like to change this order, or we would, I was just using cutting of it, and I would include it here. As you might understand that something is wrong here, that the poem, which is the root element, should contain everything that is under it. Everything that starts under it should also close under it. And if we put it here, there's something, as we can see, that stanza that should be under the poem is still continuing after it. And if you would validate it, we might assume that there's something like an error displayed. Yes. What is nice about any of these a bit more developed editors is that it usually gives you some hints of what the problem was. And in this case, it just says that the markup in the document following the root element must be well-formed. And it points out where the issue is. So it puts here the error sign that, okay, something is here now messed up. So it must be closed. Everything that falls under the root element must also, if it starts under the root element poem, it also must end under it as well. And if we would say that the author, if we would like do something like this, this doesn't make too much sense in a structured way, but if we would say that under author, there should be the date and the title of the poem. I'll just copy-paste that. If we would do something like this, again, as we can see, there's no problem, because under author, there's a date and title elements that start, but they also close in the according place. And before the stanza starts, the author closes. This is the basic well-formedness of XML documents. If you grasp this, these two simple rules, it will also get you quite far. Because most likely in the assignments that you do, but also later on when you progress towards the exam of the document of this course, you might have to interpret something like this in the exam. I don't say that that will happen, but it might be probable. So if you understand how this nesting is takes place and how they should start and close before the next one does, then you are quite fine. You will make it far within this course. Does this make sense to all of you? Are there any concerns about this, these two rules? Beginning and end tag and the nesting of documents. We will have quite many examples where we'll discuss this further. But any questions so far? Rather clear? Simple? Or... Okay, let's look at this further. If we think about XML, writing some XML code, there are some kind of a writing conventions. Because most likely when we are developing with XML in organizational context, it's not just us who are working with these documents. And for us, writing something like this, that everything is aligned in the left-hand side, it might be that we still make some kind of a sense out of it, but there are some writing conventions related to any kind of a markup language, is that it should be quite easily readable, also for humans, when you are dealing with the code. So just for future practice, don't learn something like this. If you structure your document in a kind of a visual way, that the root element that starts and everything that follows, anything that opens under it is structured to the right, it helps you to read the document and interpret it much faster. That is one guideline we would like to share with you. And then this about this basic XML declaration monster that is in the start of the documents. This is something that you see in any of the XML documents, but the how it's presented is slightly differing. So since the first XML version or the notation came up, it was called the 1.0, but since then there has been a newer version of XML that is slightly updated with few more clarifications for any developer or anyone who applies XML. So it's that it's optional to be used when you use the XML 1.0, but when you are applying XML version 1.1, it's mandatory to be used. So these are some conventions that are just put there in place by this World Wide Web consortium who came up with XML. It's just about making something clear for anyone who applies them. This is something that you don't have to care too much about, but I just want to say what it is and why it should be there. What the declaration includes is that it has the version of XML notation. It then has something about the character encoding. So what is the character coding and the character set of XML is that it uses what we call Unicode that includes almost all symbols of natural languages that are used. And later in the next or the second lecture, Philip will also talk about this differentiation between natural and formal languages. That also helps to understand this matter. But the thing is that natural languages, they evolve constantly, and the XML earlier was tied to a Unicode, a specific version of it, which caused some limitations. And right now it's just free to Unicode, so it shouldn't cause any problems as such. But as you can read in the bottom, is that when more systems are in place, let's just say that more technologies need to understand the same documents. It's we are using it here now, but in a company context, it might be that it's it's discussed with some kind of other system, and then it goes to maybe even another system, and then showed in a web browser to a human being. It might be that something gets lost if the systems don't match, if they don't speak the same language. So even if XML understands all of this, it might be that some software applications don't understand them. And it might be that something is then breaking down when you use A with dots or O with dots, like in Finnish language. So just to be prepared for this if you deal with XML in your work life later on. And if we look at these two declarations here that are actually the same ones, what it says there is the XML version, the encoding, the character set, which is Unicode, and what it then says is the standalone. Standalone means that the grammar constraints, so the DTD that Philip is going to talk to you about in the next lecture, is that this document is not meant to be standalone. There's most likely some rules and grammar given to it in another place. There's a DTD document somewhere else that gives the structure and the rules for this XML document. And that's what the standalone means, but it's not mandatory to be written in your document. So if we look here in Eclipse, it's not put up in here. But in the next lectures, when the grammar comes into place, which we don't discuss in this lecture yet, is, I'll just show how it is. Okay, in this case, the grammar is included in the document, and it says that it's a standalone document. The grammar is given within. But it might also be, we don't go to these documents yet, so don't worry, but it also might be that it's not standalone. There's, in the second line, it says that there's an invoice DTD somewhere. How it's declared, we go to later on, but just for you to understand this differentiation, whether the grammar is given inside or somewhere else. And that's the kind of a basic ideology there. And but yeah, don't worry too much about the XML declaration. It's something that is there, and just read these couple of things about it, just to know what it means, and especially if you mark there standalone yes, and you still point to external DTD, that's not really a good practice. And what is kind of at the very, very essential thing about this course is the logical structure of XML, that this XML uses this start and end tags as containers, and what these containers, the start tag, the end tag, and the content within, they form the element, which are kind of the essentials of XML. There's also something called attributes that give some more information to these elements that we'll discuss next in this lecture. But most of all, these elements are the building blocks of which XML is based on. And as soon as you are quite comfortable in playing around with the documents, with the taking into account the well-formedness rules, what we discussed earlier, so that there must be always the beginning and an end tag, and that these elements are properly nested. So once you become comfortable playing around with these structures and knowing when it doesn't break down, then you're quite fine. There's a question now on the message board. I don't know how long it's been there, so. So if it's already declared in the document, you don't have to specify that it's the one to be used because you have it in the document already. So the declaration is within the XML document already. It defines the character set to be used within that document. Does that answer the question, or did I understand the question wrong? Maybe the one who asked can also say. Yeah, exactly. It's default, you don't have to say it. But if you're using something else, you can say that. But the thing is that the XML 1.1 uses Unicode. It's the kind of the preferred and, let's say, it's not, I don't say that it's mandatory, but it's the suggested one to be used. Because what if it's something else, I mean, Unicode is the kind of a higher level. If it's something like ASCII or something, it still includes what is in Unicode. So there's, at least personally, I don't see a problem if you always have Unicode anyways. But does someone know a situation when you might mark, when it makes more sense in XML to mark something else than Unicode, when Unicode is the kind of the more universal way? Does somebody have a kind of a problem situation when it might occur? Personally, I haven't witnessed something like this, but. Okay, but if you have any similar questions, just mark them down or just you can just shout. That's also fine. And what we talk when we talked about the nesting of documents is that when we nest documents in a way that there's somehow the root element and the child elements that go under it, and the sibling elements that are at the same level with that child element, they somehow form this tree structure. And this is the very basic of XML, and this is actually what the assignment 1 and 2 are kind of testing you about, that you grasp this tree structure and also the nesting of these documents. And this is the essential of logical structure. And if we think about the tree structure, the example here that is now actually properly nested, date starts, date is the is the root element. Under it are three elements, day, month, and year. And how do you know that they are sibling elements? Is that day ends before month starts, and month starts before year starts. So they are equal to each other, and they go under date. And that forms the tree structure. And if we include some more elements here, the tree, of course, gets more complex. I will have later on this lecture one other tree structure example still. So just to test, like, if you understood what I mean, is the date the child element of invoice number? I mean, is the date element here invoice number's child element? Maybe if somebody knows, just shout. It's not. Exactly. Invoice number, even though it's written wrong. I mean, this is the kind of a convention of writing. If somebody else, let's just say that there's a group of developers, they all are exposed to the same set of XML documents. And if somebody writes it in this way, that invoice number that actually closes before date starts, and it's presented that date is kind of a going under it, it's kind of a misleading the ones who are using this later on. If we think about what could be a better ways to handle it, if we need to have if invoice number actually has to be the parent element to date, the invoice number should go just before the header ends there, so after the date closes. Then it would be making more sense, this type of like a writing convention, if we think about that everything is always nested like this, that it looks better. But this is kind of a misleading and not very good way to write XML. So, but most importantly, when the use of XML gets slightly more complicated, you sometimes have reasons to include something we call attributes that add more information to the elements. And until now, we just presented examples where it was just the beginning and an end tag and the content, primary content that goes inside it. So with attributes, you can hide some information. Let's say that you would like to be presenting everything, all the information on a web browser, let's say the poem or something like this, on a web browser to your friends or something. By the use of attributes, let's just say, okay, here's something about last name, but when it's a poem, you might still have some information about the year it was produced or something. You might have it as an attribute that it's not actually presented in an element structure and in an element content to the reader. This, what is now hidden here as also as the previous name or the family name of this person, it might be something that it's meaningful to store, but not necessarily to present to someone. There are different reasons for using attributes, but most of all, it's when some meta information is needed to be attached to elements. But of course, it depends. Sometimes, okay, let's just say that you would like to present something, this person's current name on a web, like on a web browser to your readers of your blog or something, and you have done it in a way that when you put the cursor on top of this name as a kind of a pop-up, it still shows, okay, this name of the person has earlier been this, and it takes that information from the attribute. This is just one example, but there are different reasons for including something like attributes, but most of all, they make the code much tidier and more meaningful, especially when the examples get more complex. Now we're talking about something simple as like a poem, but if we are talking about handling the metadata of very, very complex technical documentation or something, it might be that the using attributes to add more information to the elements is the right way to go. I'll briefly show you, or very soon show you, how to deal with those attributes in the Eclipse tool, but there are also some other like basics of XML that are given in this notation. So what XML, this simple notation and the guideline for developers, tells is that in XML documents, you can attach some information to other people who are using these same XML documents. Maybe they are web developers, or if they are something like content management in an organization, there are some other people who might be dealing with the same documents. And with the use of comments to be added there, it's a kind of a standardized way to include some information for others that it's not interpreted as code or presented in a web browser. This is something that's internal for the ones who are using this these documents. Yeah, and I said here that if we think about this, so something like XML processor, the one who's interpreting in Eclipse, it all already within the tool tries to interpret the markup and present and validate it. And not necessary. This might be some reasons why this text of a comment would be then used, let's say, by a browser, but it doesn't need to be. This is some kind of a decision to be made by any individual or organization who develops with XML. It might be that it's just more usable to have this something for the developers, kind of a hints included there. Let's just say that it's there's some odd way of presenting some information that might confuse some other developers. You might just add this kind of a comments to say them that, hey, don't worry about this. This is just the way I presented this and for future reference. And that's only one reason why to use this. When we talk about XML, what needs to be understood that it's one example of a markup language similar to this HTML. So when we talk about text written in markup languages, it includes this markup and the primary content. And markup is this beginning and end tags, what we have been already discussed about, something that seals the primary content to itself. And when we are talking about rules for any markup language, they have to be clearly defined and systematic so that, like, machines, computers, technologies, services can interpret those. I mean, we as human beings, if we write something sloppy there with markup and do all kinds of errors, we still can interpret it because we know it we can infer from the context what it means. But machines don't have this luxury. They might have the luxury, but why should they? If you can have a few simple rules to follow, it helps everyone. It makes life easier. And this is what markup language means, that there's markup and then the primary content. And this markup, what goes in these inside these elements behind this start and end tags, it's metadata that it's used to include some additional information to describe the primary content. And that is why when I showed you the poem, it still had something like informative, like element names, that you know what it's about. If let's say we are presenting information about the author and we just put it like Kverty or something like this, it doesn't tell anything. But when there are human beings involved in developing it further and using it, applying it, usage of informative names is the way to go. And what is also said down there, that HTML is also a good example of a markup language, such as XML. There are different types of markup. If you think about HTML, as many of you had heard about it before, it's something that mixes up different types of markup. It also says how information should be presented to human beings. So if we look at these three different examples, the presentational markup is something that to give an external presentation. Procedural markup is something to be interpreted as a processing instruction when it's interpreted by the processor. And descriptive markup is something just to be describing the content. And let's look at what this actually means. So in presentational markup, if you are familiar with HTML, it looks very similar to the XML code that I showed you. But if you would use the italics, the brackets and I included and concluded, it's interpreted as a presentational markup because it tells how to show that to human beings on a web browser. So it would be showing as italics. But if you think about XML, XML is not about something like how you should be presenting information for human beings. If you would, in the poem, use this kind of an I as an element name, it as alone doesn't say how you should be presenting that. The I there doesn't mean the same thing as it means in HTML. Because as you might remember from the earlier slide, the XML notation doesn't define any of the element names and attribute names. Whoever extends on XML can decide for themselves what the meaning of it is. And in the case of HTML, that is a markup language for presenting information on a web browser and for human beings. It's in that context, I is given just like a standardized tag for italics. Okay, can one put anything inside the tags? What the use for these tags? Yeah, so then we might, I'll just still put this basic slide about XML. So XML specification is about describing the contents of the, describing the primary content. So it doesn't define any of these element names. So yes, you can put anything inside these tags. But again, here it depends on what are you doing? Are you a web developer who's developing some kind of a new language to describe a classes of documents? Or are you applying something that is already existing? Let's say you are working in a library, and for describing the collections of books, there's already something defined where the meanings of these elements are already given. So it depends, are you applying something that already is, or are you creating your own language? And in case you are creating your own language, let's say for the purpose of your own company, you yourself define the meaning, what these tags mean. Unlike in HTML, when you are applying something that is, the rules are there, then you apply those. And what's the use for these tags? It's just that markup languages give a kind of a very simple way of presenting. I mean, okay, I'll present these three examples, and then we can elaborate further on what's the use for these tags. Okay, let's go to the second example. So procedural markup is something like a processing instruction for the application. So in XML, you might use something like this, C data, and you put something inside of it. So this tells actually the processor to handle this tags, the I and markup language in a particular way. I'm not sure does anyone know what this could mean in XML? I can give you the answer straight away. I just made one example here already to the invoices document. As you can see in the invoices document, don't look at the attributes whatsoever there in the start. But as you can see, I used this, what was there in the slide, this C data and this ending tag as a kind of a container to include everything, the address, street, city, state, under it. Does anyone know what this would mean when we would process this? This is just one way of using XML. It's not very used in a meaningful way here, but it's just to present what a procedural markup means. This would mean that everything that's under this bracket, C data, and then the bracket starts, and then it ends, everything that is behind it, or like inside it, should be understood as something like character data. Philip will discuss with you further what character data means, but it's basically just text. So if you would put this on a web browser or something, everything in here, it would also show those element titles, those starting and end tag, while all the other information might be presented in a different way. That's just say that present all of this as just text. Don't mind the those starting and end tags. They are now meaningless. It's just any kind of a text. So in this case, it wouldn't interpret those beginning and end tags as containers. It just presents that as it is. Does that make sense? We can show that later in on a web browser still. So, and then what we come to what XML is about. So XML is just a main way to describe the primary content. That's what XML is about. XML isn't too much about this two types of other markup, like procedural markup and presentational markup. XML is there just to give a kind of a simple structure, to give these containers, and to describe the primary content. And if we think about the markup types further, this markup can serve very different purposes. And if we think about that XML is used for descriptive markup, just to describe the content, not about how it should be presented to human beings, there are also differences here. So if we look at HTML, what was created actually based on the SGML, so the kind of a father and mother of XML, it mixes up these types of markup. So in HTML, what is an own language, all of this has some kind of information also how to present this to human beings, and also how it should be processed when it's read. So some of you that might have worked with HTML, you know that when you use tag H2, it's a header, it's a title on the second order. It also gives you some impression how it should look like on a web browser. But in terms of if this would be XML, this wouldn't tell anything about how it should look like on a web browser. If you put this on a browser, it's just either the browser puts just that all of this as text, it doesn't tell anything, or it doesn't even show anything, depending on what browser you use. But it doesn't understand, when you're talking about XML, how this should be presented. And that's what XML is all about. So giving a kind of a basic ingredients, and depending on what purpose you are creating your language, there you can define for what the purpose is. If we would be creating, XML would have similar limitations, that's why I say limitations, because XML was mainly made there for three particular reasons: to give some structure for documents, classes of documents, and to describe metadata, but also, and most of all, to allow different machines to communicate with each other, not humans to interpret. If XML would be about giving this external presentation, what does that give for any kind of a system that tries to interpret another system? Because they don't need to have such an external presentation. They don't care about how it should look like or how it looks like. And that's the kind of a beauty of XML, is that you might be using the XML notation to create a language such as XHTML to present information on a web page. But because it's about descriptive markup, it's just to describe the content in a unified and systematic way. You can also define a language such as SOAP that we are discussing later in this course, for allowing different systems services to interact with each other. Because this kind of, we would in such a context have something like UL or something, it doesn't mess it up as something that we would be presenting it to a human beings. It has an own meaning in that particular context. And that is why none of the element names, attribute names, are standardized by XML. You define what those mean in the context you are working with. And with XML, you might be using it for so many different reasons. Does this clarify the question at all, why to use these tags? Maybe the one who sent this can just say yes or no, and we can elaborate further. Do you understand this, why XML doesn't specify the meanings of those, the element names and attribute names? Is it rather clear? Sorry?
You don't have to use, you can use text just A, B without any meaning, but humans don't understand the text out there that humans understand. Mm.
Philip here presents some examples of formal and natural languages. And Philip, do you want to say those yourself? He had a pretty good example here.
Yeah, so we will look at that in the next one of the next lectures when we talk about natural and formal languages in XML as well. So for the usage of XML and for the computer, it doesn't matter if the text have any meaning. So we could just use A, B, C, D, etc. The computer wouldn't mind. He would still understand everything. But the giving sense-making names for the text is more or less a convention to make it easier for other developers to reuse the XML documents and the languages that we created, because that's what XML is also very much about, that we can reuse languages if we have to use something in the same context and that we can standardize it. And if we wouldn't use something that has a meaning for a human, then the next developer wouldn't understand probably what that document is at all about.
Yeah. Thank you, Philip.
Is it clear until now? And remember, you can also just shout aloud when something is not making sense. Just say, stop, stop, help. But yeah, external presentation, it's kind of a, when talking about XML, it's one of the first examples that people come up with, that when you have this, any of these XML documents, you must give it some kind of a external presentation that humans can, like in this way, that it has some colors, it's presented in a sense-making way, and that's kind of a, the most typical like way how XML is usually discussed about, so that we have some XML documents and we give it an external presentation, such as XHTML, which is an XML language. That's a perfect example, but it's just one of the ways for using XML, this simple notation way that you can derive and use in so many different purposes. But if you are doing this using or want to give an external presentation, for example, to the poem document we had earlier, then we can do that by different means. It's always, not always, but one way of giving such an external presentation is by the use of style sheets. And in the last assignment that you will have, we will try this out. So what we are dealing with there is something called XSL, so Extensible Style Sheet Language, kind of a, which is a family of languages where one mean of using it is to give it an external presentation. And that's your last assignment. Along with the exchange of data between systems assignment. So with style sheets, we can add different types of means of presenting information for humans, but also add figures and other things to the XML documents. And what is pretty nice way to use XML is that actually nowadays you are using different types of devices. And by defining different types of style sheets for different devices, you can give them a particular look and feel that is usable, and it's nice. Let's just say that it fits the kind of a device that you are using. It's not the only way of giving external presentation to XML. There are different ways. You can also use something that we call entities, that we call discuss briefly later on in this course. But you also might be using some other languages. You might be dealing with HTML5 or some. It's still there are all kinds of options when we want to present information online on a web browser. So, but XML and the use of different types of style sheets, it's one way to go, and we will try out that during this course still. And this kind of it just says the same thing in a different way. So what you have there is the XML document, you have a style sheet, it's processed, and it's given a particular look and feel depending on your device. And there are different languages that are created to suit different purposes that XML can then make use of and transform to. So I'll just like to give a couple of examples again and just to recap some things and also present some new things we haven't discussed about. So have a look at this, what I just copy-pasted here. If we think about XML and the well-formedness of XML and the processing of XML, that there must be two things that are together. So every single element has a beginning and an end tag, and they are properly nested. The two rules for XML documents to be able to process correctly. Is it okay like this? Is there any problem you see in doing like this? It's still an XML document like that. Technically, is there anything wrong with this? Did anyone read through it?
No, I think it's valid.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just fine. It's just the again about the writing conventions. Just think about that your colleague who works with you in a company has prepared some XML document for, let's say, describing books in a library or something like this, and would use this kind of a way of presentation, and you would have to extend on it. It's terrible, and that's why always to these writing conventions that you structure them nicely. There's nothing technically wrong with something like this, but it's just unmanageable. What about this? Is this okay? I haven't actually talked about this, and the answer is that it's not okay. As you can see, XML is case sensitive. Author with a capital A is not the same as author with lowercase a. XML is case sensitive, and this would break down. So if we, let's go back to the, this one, and then we would do just a minor error. For the author, we would use a capital letter. Okay, this is enhanced or like a good editor, it immediately tells that, okay, there's something wrong about it. But just remember, XML is case sensitive, and there are also some kind of a writing conventions when it comes to writing these element and attribute names. Because the reason that it's case sensitive and this kind of errors very easily happen, there are, for example, guidelines that you should just use like lowercase symbols, that it's just easier to manage and you don't fall to that kind of a mistakes that somehow break. Especially if such a small error would be the cause why a particular message isn't delivered from one system to another. Let's say from an accounting department to some other administrative function that they are trying to retrieve some documents to the systems that use XML for this data interchange. And the case sensitivity is the case there as well. And if something like this is the cause why something breaks down, there are just some like conventions that should be used to avoid this. So using lowercase writing is one way to avoid it, of course. But depending on the environment, like here, if you just put the capital letter, okay, it identifies that and you know that there's a problem. And when you try to validate it, right click, validate, it shows that there's an error. By the way, as you can see down there, there are all the time those warnings, and that just means that there's no grammar constraints given to this document so that you can freely modify anything you want. And in the next lecture, Philip goes to why it makes sense to give some kind of a grammar to the documents. Because, okay, I can already give you the answer. If there's no grammar, no constraints, anyone can modify in any way. And again, if there are like different systems that are somehow depending on some kind of a structure, if there isn't a structure, no conventions, there's no interaction between systems. And XML is one of the reasons why nowadays it's extremely easy to exchange information between systems and to modify, create new languages, and make the any type of usage of technology more user-friendly. Okay, so far, is everything okay? Any questions so far? Okay, next one. Again, this is something that we didn't discuss about. Validating documents in... There was a question. Validating documents in Notepad++. I personally don't have a PC anymore, so I unfortunately cannot answer this, but I think validating. Philip, have you used Notepad? Yeah. So actually, what is also in the guidelines that when you validate the documents and when you give in the assignments, you might have to take some kind of a screen capture from the World Wide Web Consortium validator. I mean, I guess Tony gave some freedom here as well, but if you have the just the, if you look at from the slides and open the link to the World Wide Web validator, you can just use that as well. But Notepad Plus, I would be quite surprised if there's no. Yeah. Yeah, so either, again, here Notepad was just one because it's so lightweight, okay, but it's not a real developer tool, so use the World Wide Web, the online validator, or alternatively, of course, you can use Eclipse, but I think last year it was rather fine. At least I didn't hear from Tony that there were too many complaints about using the online validator then. And again, if you notice the well-formedness and those case sensitivity problems yourself, it of course makes you remember those much better later on. But then about this, hey, and still discuss with Tony if he has some suggestions how to solve that issue from last year, because I think the Notepad was mainly used by students there, so. So discuss with him if you don't like to use this online version. So this one, even though we didn't discuss about it, but do you see any problem here? Maybe you can just shout aloud. It's about the first attribute that I can tell. So this is again something that is mandatory in XML, so that when there's an attribute, like here, there's a title, and then there's an attribute author tied to the title element with the value Edgar Allan Poe, but there's no brackets given. This would be terminated immediately. So I'll still show this. Let's have an attribute version here. It's the same one. I just used this one there. I took away the brackets and then tried to validate it. There was some question coming. Yeah, the reason why I don't use Notepad++ on this computer because I don't have a PC myself, and I wanted to prepare the examples for you somehow, and that's why I chose Eclipse. I'm very sorry about that, but I think there still needs to be some flexibility on what tools you use. But yeah, try to just hang along. But again, okay, here it says that there's an open quote there, and an error. And the other error message is actually to another document. This is some kind of a function of Eclipse. If you still have something open there that has some problems, when you validate it, it also points out the errors from another document. And as you can see on the left, the other error is pointing out to the other document. But this is something that you should remember, is that for or like this attributes that you assign and integrate to elements, you should have the brackets include. Was there another I saw something happening. Okay. Thought there was a question, but no. Okay, that's something that's in XML. So this case sensitivity, XML is case sensitive, so if you have capital letters, it's a different element name than without a capital letters, and the use of these brackets in attributes. But I'm just thinking, how much time do we have? We don't have too much time anymore because I wanted to go with you through a couple of examples. So, but if we think about something like this kind of a note. When to use attributes, this is, again, a matter of choice. I wanted to just here add a couple of, we had an element version of the same poem where we had this following structure that under poem, there's an author, and then, okay, this is the version we played around with. I'll quickly just put it here. And now it should be correct, right? It still has the X there, but it goes away when we validate it. So in sometimes, just dealing with elements is just fine when we are discussing such a simple example. But when we start adding more information to it, normally you don't start it with the XML document. As you will see in the next lecture, is that the grammar, the constraints, tell what you can do with your document. You don't, when you're dealing with XML, you don't randomly start like this, that, okay, there's an author element, and I add to it an attribute called date with the value of 89, and then you would delete this next line there. When you're dealing with XML, you don't do it this way, that you have an XML document that you randomly change. You still have when there's a grammar, then it kind of gives you the rules what you can do with your XML documents. It says what an element can contain and what it shouldn't contain. And that's the focus of the next lecture. But when we start using attributes, it of course makes the much more easier to read, but it also might make it much more informative. If there is something like a poem, and let's just say this XML document would contain much more than a poem, it might be that under it we can just give by using this meta information, these attributes, we can just hide many things from the primary content of this document and just leave it there as a kind of a information that you might somehow use later on for other purposes. One example we could give to the invoice. So invoice, like this is something that you might get from your electricity company or something else, or from anything. Invoice could be structured something like this within that company. And from this we could actually derive and print out some of the information about the invoice that you might receive. So what happens here is that there's an invoice and then there's a header section that actually includes the number of the invoice and then information about the one who's receiving it and who it should be billed to. And as you can see, when the header ends here, then there's item and then there's information about the product that you have to pay in this invoice. You could handle it in this way, that everything is here plainly as elements. But in some cases, it might be that some of the information you wouldn't display in a particular manner. So you wouldn't want to display everything in that bill. You might have something as a meta information for the company usage and hide it as attributes. So what I did here is I just took some of the information and added it as attributes instead of using elements. Okay, there's a plugin for Notepad++ for XML validation. Whoopee, that's very good. Who found it? Maybe the one who found it, can you maybe send a link to the mailing list for this course? And I think everyone would appreciate if you might send a link how to find it, or can you download it immediately? Sorry? Okay, so you can directly add it there. So that's very good. Thanks for this. And still, sorry about not using Notepad++ here, but I thought that preparing the lectures in an own computer and not in a ways of working that I find comfortable, it's better in the end for you as well. But maybe for next year, we try to keep with one single tool that we are using, just for clarity. Okay, but that's one way of handling with attributes. But again, this depends on what do you want to maybe present to the users, or what do you want to exchange between systems. And the usage of attributes sometimes is just more sense-making. But we will go in the next lectures then to how you can structure those, or how you can put some constraints on what an attribute might be, or what an element might consider. But before that, I would still like to elaborate just slightly on the tree structure. So as you can remember that the XML document, when there's a root element, the child element, the sibling elements, those form a tree structure. So here's one example. Is it a match or not? The document there is rather simply presented in a rather simplified way. So what do you think? Is it a match? Does the tree structure match the document?
Yes,
it does. So as you can see here is that there's the root element poem. It has four elements, and all of those are siblings to each other. They close before one starts. But the stanza has still two elements under it, lined with a name. And this tree structure here presents the exact document here. There are different conventions for presenting these tree structures. And for example, if you would have 10 lines under the stanza, there might be also some presentations that it only gives the one line there because it's the same element. So there are different conventions, but in the examples we follow this one. So I think in the second week's task, or even in the first week's task, there's a kind of a tree structure you should interpret and turn it out in some kind of XML document. So this is kind of the way to do it. That might help you. But as we discussed here, and the tool that I'm using, this Eclipse, it always says validate the when we are dealing with the XML document. But what we are actually doing when we validate XML is that we are checking the XML document against the grammar, the constraints. And we haven't done it today yet. We have just looked at the XML document and whether it's well-formed or not. And if there are some other problems like the capital letter, some brackets missing or something. But in the next lecture, we go more to the even deeper to the essence of XML language, is that giving XML documents rules, constraints. And the markup of a particular language, markup you mean that it's the starting and end tags and the that include the primary content, is defined by these declarations in a DTD. This DTD is just a means of giving these constraints. It's a rather simplified way. So when you later on work in a company context and you might be have to develop some kind of a grammar rules for a particular language, let's say for describing something like books in a library or metadata for learning materials or in an industry for technical documentation, most likely you wouldn't be using DTD. You are using some other languages for describing the grammar that are more advanced. DTD is rather simple and even it puts even too much constraint, so you can't be too flexible or give too advanced ways of handling the elements and attributes. But what the DTD kind of gives is that it just says what element types and what elements are allowed in your XML document. It also says in which order they should be appearing. And in the next lecture, Philip is then will talk about different types of elements and attributes, and it also gives constraints about this. And it just gives the logical structure that the XML document might follow, that you shouldn't randomly just add attributes where you want and adapt it and send it further, is that, but give a kind of a clear constraints that then can be applied by a full one organization or even one entire industry or let's just say a group of developers all around the world if we're talking about XHTML or similar XML-based languages. So the markup declarations that kind of give these rules, they can be given in the XML document itself. But in most cases, it's not very sense-making, because if you are giving rules for one XML document, it might be that, then you have a very simple case that you are applying XML for. But usually, XML is applied in a more complex situations, and then the DTD is separate, the constraints, and then you might have tons of POEM like XML documents from all kind of eras and then you have separated the XML documents from that DTD. So this is just a kind of a, even though we don't today go to the how we can interpret these DTDs, but this is just the one way to include it in the document. You might remember from one of the earlier examples that in the declaration we might have this saying there in the end that if it's standalone, yes or no. In this case, it would be a standalone. We would put yes, because the constraints are given in the XML document itself. But if we have a separate document that explains these constraints, then we would include something like this in the second row, that it points to a DTD file that gives these constraints. But Philip will explain to you this how the logic behind the DTDs in the next lecture. And okay, this lecture we have mainly been discussing about the well-formedness rules of XML, but when we have a DTD, there are also second set of rules that is called the validity rules for XML. And this is actually what we have discussed so far contains maybe at least 2/3 of the XML. Let's say half of the XML notation. The guidelines of XML, how you should apply XML and develop it further for different purposes, we have actually gone through maybe half of their recommendation. It's very, very simple in the end. But when we have the second set of rules, it's just about when there's a DTD, when there are grammar constraints attached to your XML documents, then we have validity rules. And validity rules are as simple as that when you have the XML document, that it just complies. It follows exactly the grammar rules. And if it doesn't, the operation is terminated. It's not it just say that there's something wrong. There's a mismatch, do something about it. And that's the beauty of XML. In a case of presenting something on a web browser, but also when different systems discuss with each other. When you have such constraints that can be standardized and systematic and simple, that's what XML is about. So just remember these two types of rules. Well-formedness rules, beginning and end tag, properly nested, and then validity rules when there's a DTD that the XML document fits to that DTD. With this information, you will go far in this course. Okay, still a couple of slides. So what actually happens in XML is that there's an XML document and it's somehow processed. What we actually have been doing in this Eclipse tool that it already processes, it goes through the XML document and tries to find if there are any errors inside of it. Again, depending on what kind of environment you are developing with, it might be that this processor is somehow inbuilt in the environment. Let's say on a web browser, when you're using it, when you are a good example is the Optima space. When we clicked on the XML document, it actually processes it within the application itself. It tries to interpret it and make sense out of it. So then it's actually done. The XML processor is included within the web browser. But there are all kinds of different examples when the XML document is only processed in another environment if it's exchanged between different systems. So again, it depends at which state in time these XML documents are processed and validated. But just remember that these two rules must be met, that XML is successfully moved one system to another, or that the XML documents are presented nicely on a web browser if there's an external presentation given to it, like a style sheet. And Yeah, what I said in the start of the lecture is that the HTML, there's a kind of HTML heritage here, that when you display XML documents on a web browser, the HTML was very, very prominent, and even if there are still errors in the document and your code, something like in relation to well-formedness or validity, it still might try to interpret it and make the best out of it, what it can, and present it on the web browser. But usually in XML or in any other case in XML, this is not okay, because XML is very, very simple set of rules that those have to be met, and that's why it's so largely applied with. But this is one kind of an exception where invalid XML is tried to interpret it, and it has to deal with the HTML heritage. And just to kind of a recap, is that HTML was made and based on this HTML that was before XML time. That was very, very complex set of rules from which HTML was derived with. But since then, the more valid version, XHTML, came to be, but still this invalid XML might be presented when you try to put it to a browser. Okay, and this is just a kind of some trivia that is not too necessary for this course, but there are different types of XML processors. So something that check only the well-formedness rules and some that check the validity rules. The Notepad++ in this case was only checking for the well-formedness, and with the plugin you can also check the validity. So it doesn't do the check. How was it with Notepad++?
Check validity against any kind of schema.
Yeah. With the plugin, it's like a checks against any kind of schema. But in terms of, here's also a kind of a terminology issue. When you do validity check, for example, in Eclipse, when I did it without DTD, it just checked for the well-formedness, but it is called to be in the environment as validity check. But in XML, just try to remember this, that validity rules are relating to when there's a DTD, when there's the connection of XML document and a DTD, just for future reference, just to avoid any misunderstandings. But it depends on if it's in the browser itself or is it in the environment that you're developing or in some other system that does this validity check. And just as a kind of a last step, this is what we already talked about. It's quite late already. But for this lecture, I would just like to point out these few of the readings that are important. Because as you might remember, the course book that we gave, it's extremely extensive. It describes so many different parts of XML. So these are the things that are relevant for this lecture. And after each lecture, we try to give you the essential readings that help you in the exam. But okay, that was it. So next week, Philip is starting with the DTD. And remember, next Thursday is the first deadline for the task. So hopefully this will guide you started. Okay, see you. What? Put it online? Do you know the address?
No.
I'll give you so that
already chatting.
Okay.